Kathy's very concerned about my appearance, so I get this. This stuff is great. Ah, cappuccino. Cappuccino.
He doesn't get it at home.
Cappuccino cheesecake. As far as I know, you can buy this in one place in Africa, only one place. It will be there for a month next year in August. We'll be in Cape Town, South Africa, but they sell it nowhere else. So this has to linger for about 6 months. Your name again? The secretary. The Rosemont Bible Church secretary. I could learn to like you.
It's not hard.
Okay.
Something nice about your wife.
Oh, yeah. That's why we're here, you know.
Yeah. First love story in the Bible, some of you know. Very first love story in the Bible. Eve went up to Adam and said, "Adam, do you really, really love me?" And Adam said, "Who else?" Okay, the gentleman on the tape has asked me to repeat the last comments of the second session prior to lunch because they didn't get on the tape. I outran the tape, apparently. So he said, "Would you repeat?" And I'll repeat 5 minutes or so, 5-10 minutes at the very most. Then we have a little assignment for you to get into the whole conflict section. And then Kathy and I hope to work before afternoon tea with 5-2 to 6-13. 5-2, 6-13, what we call the conflict section, courtship, centerpiece, conflict, concert. And somebody asked me, let me solve this one straight away as well. Why start over here and not here? If a book starts with 1-1, why don't you guys start with 1-1? Now, why do you start in the middle? And the reason is very simple. The centerpiece, when you hear about a wedding day like that and a wedding night like that, it should set your sights high and whet your appetite and say, "Oh, if I could have a day, if we could have a night like that." See, then you're ready to say, "How do we get there?" If the destination is spelled out well, it provides some motivation for the journey, right? So that's why we start in the middle. Set the destination high and lofty, and that gives you more motivation and drive to journey well. So we said at the end, I think, the four W's, that God recognizes wanting. After all, he's the one who made hormones. Hormones and that kind of stuff is Genesis 2. That's Genesis 2 stuff, not Genesis 3. Satan messes up a good thing, but sex is a good thing. Again, God said one flesh. We would have written one mind, one heart, and so on. God said no, one flesh. So the wanting, the chemistry, the hormones, she turns me on, all of that is language that God understands and he endorses. He made us that way. But like a fire in a fireplace, now you let a fire loose outside the fireplace, it can damage the rug, the curtains, and the whole house can go down in flames. It needs to be kept inside the fireplace. The flip side, of course, is that no fire in the fireplace is silly, too. Now, sexless marriages are also a serious affront to God. Now, he's made you the same and different for a reason. God's the first person in the universe that spoke French. He created male and female, and he said, "Vive la différence." Right? Vive la différence. He says, "I love the differences. Love the differences." And when Adam said, "Bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh, she's like me, she shall be called Isha, woman," because she was taken out of Ish, he's saying she's not the same. So, bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh, but she's Isha, taken out of ish, we are not the same. And therefore, 2:24, when there's a therefore in Scripture, I always want to find out what it's there for, right? What's the therefore there for? So, isha taken out of ish, therefore, leaving, cleaving, and weaving. And this is an aside, but you can really run with this one, especially at a place like McGill, which has a gay pride week and a queer 101, very popular course on campus. But isha, ish, therefore, marriage, leaving, cleaving, weaving. God says in Genesis 2, in part of my good world that I created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. It's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. So that's all I need to say, that gay relationships don't need respect and understanding. They need time so they can tell us their story. But to endorse an orientation that leads to a lifestyle, I think, is an insult to Genesis 2. It really is. Therefore, and the intent of God's good created world is fairly clear, this is not God's best. And we'll be at the wedding. This is going to be at least 10 minutes. We're getting to know Lisa Salito and her friend, her fiancé, well. We're coming back early from California to go to their wedding, January 5. She's marrying a Catholic chap, Michelle, who's doing his master's or doctoral work on the origins of gay orientation and practice. And we've had a few times together. Lisa was in Africa with us 6 months, calls us mom and dad, delightful girl. And Michelle, her fiancé, said to us that the interesting thing is that I have yet to come across a young gentleman of gay orientation or practice who speaks about his father with affection and respect. And secondly, I still am waiting to meet the first one who's not on heavy medication. They're on medication, and they cannot speak about their father with affection and respect. That's my experience, too. So Henri Nouwen says, the longing to be loved is so profound that we search for it in all the wrong places. But if we understand that, then we start not with repugnance or judgment. We say, tell me your story. It can take an hour or two or five, but tell me your story. And then you have to operate with that mixture of grace and judgment that Christians are pretty good at if they want to work at it. Okay? Grace and judgment. And they're roommates. They can't get along without each other. So, wanting is okay. Wanting, waiting, and then walking is God's reward. Wanting, waiting, and then wedding is God. So it's wanting, and then waiting, and then the walking and the wedding are God's way of saying, you've done well, you've done good, my kids. Well done. Another very graphic way to put it, this is good for your Friday night crowd, by the way, your young men and young women that you work with, just explore with them this statement. Put it up in a banner. Explore the statement, what fun is it to open your Christmas gifts on December 20? What fun to open your Christmas gifts on December 20. The day comes, you run downstairs, here's the tree. All the packages have already been trashed. The paper's ripped. The boxes are in the corner. You already know what's inside. What a fun Christmas morning. Don't do that. And not that it's the final sin that God cannot forgive. It's not. I sat earlier this morning with a couple that said, hey, we didn't wait. And another couple who said, my father and mother had sex out of wedlock. Another one said, the partner, same for my parents, and guess what, I'm the result. And that was just one table. So we don't have to follow the downward spiral. In this next generation, you've got a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, you have kids you work with on Friday night, you can do better. The spiral can go this way. It can go up. Only living salmon swim upstream. The dead ones float downstream. The living ones swim upstream. And you can do it. You can do it. You really can. This is good. So now we're getting into the conflict. And you know what prepares us for conflict is what I pointed out at the Hambly table. I forgot earlier on, but when they say about the foxes, remember what they say about the foxes? Oh, thank you. Months. You're a good husband.
Yeah, my wife told me to do that.
The wife says jump and you say how high.
Yes.
Okay. Well, not bad, but I think we need to talk. Okay. Did you pick up on this? You know, everything about Scripture is important. You don't want to miss a comma. You don't want to miss an exclamation point. So you don't want to miss anything. But when it says there, 2:15, it says, catch for us the foxes, the little foxes that ruin the vineyards, our vineyards that are in bloom. Us, our. So the way you start with conflict and you chase the pronouns again, it's so helpful. Us, our. It's not me and you, singular. It's our, plural. So you never fight against your partner, husband or wife. You always fight for the marriage. That's as important a principle to get us going on this. You don't fight against your husband or against your wife, who can have the last word, the loudest word, the right word, but you fight for the marriage, not against each other, but for the marriage. Every single problem you have is our problem. It's our fox. It's our problem. So just to get you into the section, we're going to give you about 10 minutes, no more, 10 minutes, and that is to discuss as couples, or if you're here as a single, find someone, one or two people near you, and say, when is the last time you had a pretty serious conflict? A, how did you get into it? B, and how did you get out of it? C, if you got out of it. Okay? Because every marriage has a rug, and a lot of stuff gets shoveled under the rug, and you know what happens, right? If you don't address conflicts and see them as a gift to your marriage, but under the rug, under the rug, under the rug, well, you walk a little bit into your marriage and then stumble over the rug. It's not a rug, but it's a bumpy rug, and you're going to stumble. So don't shovel stuff under, address it. When is the last time that you had a conflict? What was it? How did you get into it? How did you get out of it? 10 minutes, and that'll get us into the Song of Solomon material.